begins. The fourth parak of Bamitzia, Hazav Koner Sakasef, Akasef Eino Koner Sazav, which essentially means, as we discussed last week, that when we have two items vis-a-vis each other, so we have the necessity to define one item as money and one item as the commodity. And there are a number of reasons why that's the case. The Mishnah is interested specifically in the assumption that it's only the commodity transferring that affects the purchase in a final sense. That once you have the commodity passed over, so then the sale is final. Now, of course, if the two parties decide they want to reverse it together, so then anything between the two of them they can do. But if one party wants to change his mind and the other one doesn't, so it's no longer his right after that stage. And essentially the premise the Mishnah works off of is that it is the commodity being transferred that seals the deal and not cash. And we saw, as discussed by Rishus last week, there are two possible reasons for that. One is because you assume that a kinyan only is affected through Mashiach, through taking possession of the item. The Gemara has a whole discussion what exactly is the key kinyan min haTorah. That there's a pasuk under discussion. And we also discussed last week how it's the opposite of whatever works vis-a-vis Ben Noach. It's a whole other complicated story. We get closer to Pesach. We can revisit that topic a little bit. But the sale is essentially affected either through Mashiach, but that's the din of the Torah, or another possibility is that min haTorah, actually money does affect the sale. But because of a concern that might lead to abuse, that if a sale was final after money has been given over but the item has not been transferred to the buyer, so then maybe the seller will be unmotivated to protect the item. So for example, if there's a fire, he'll just let the fire burn and destroy the item because it's nothing off his back. It's just going to be a loss to the purchaser who's already paid for it. And as the Gemara says, doesn't mean he can willfully destroy it. If he destroys it, then he's still going to be chayiv, but he's damaging somebody else's property. But it means that if something else endangers the item, he's not going to really stress himself out too much to save it because it's not his anymore. So he could leave it in an unguarded situation, or at least not actively do anything to try to protect it, and it'll be no skin off his back. So therefore, we don't really want that situation. So Chazal said that Mashiach is Kona. And we discussed last week, it's a little bit of a question what that means. Does it mean that Mos is not Kona at all? Or does it mean that Mos is Kona, just we allow a reversal, which seems to be the more accepted shot, that really the Din HaTorah still applies, that Mos does affect the Kenyan, and for many intents and purposes, it actually will be the property of the purchaser once he pays for it. But it will still be reversible, because it's not going to be finalized until it's actually transferring, until the property itself actually transfers. In some discussion, so what does that mean? Does that mean that Mashiach was added on, that Mos was de-emphasized, and Mashiach was always there, and just Chazal told us that you have to wait until Mashiach and not just rely on Mos? Various perspectives on how to understand what exactly happened when Chazal came and made that institution. But the bottom line, the Mishnah seems to be assuming either way that Mashiach is required in order for there to be a Kenyan. So that's what the Gemara, that's what the Mishnah here is telling us, that we have to figure out what's the commodity and what is the money. Hanechoshes konas akesef, akesef and konas hanechoshes. So there, vis-a-vis nechoshes and kesef, we see that nechoshes seems to be the commodity. In this formulation, it's essentially the same structure as Zav. Kesef has the same role vis-a-vis Zav and vis-a-vis Nechoshes, which Gemara is going to talk about. There's a whole discussion of what really is the proper Girsa, and that gets into a lot of details. Maos haroz konos esayafos. Vayafos in a konos esaroz. So if you have money that has degraded, so it's no longer fully usable as money, so then that turns to be a commodity. If somebody wants to purchase that, if somebody wants to trade that, so that's going to be the commodity vis-a-vis the workable money, which is real money. Asimon, kones ha-medbeyev ha-medbey, and kones ha-simon. Now, you guys are all too young to remember the term asimon in usage in Eretz Yisrael. I assume you're all too young. But when I was learning in yeshiva in Israel, it used to be that if you made a phone call, you needed an asimon. That was what they called the coins that you put into the phones, right, the tokens. So that those are long, long gone. I don't know if payphones still exist in Israel. But certainly that method of payment is long, long gone. But the word asimon, as we know, appears here in the Mishnah, and it refers to a unformed coin. You have a coin, you have the basic raw material for a coin, but it's not yet fully encoined. That's the word we just made up. So, asimon metaltalin, I'm sorry, excuse me, asimon kone es ha-metbeya, ha-metbeya, eino kone es ha-asimon. So far we seem to be seeing a rule before looking how the Gemara interprets things, that which is more money-like will be money. In other words, coins that are viable, coins that have been labeled as such, that will be money. And that's part of the rule so far, and we'll see the Gemara is going to tell us more rules. Metalfa and konis and matbeya, matbeya and konis and metalfa. Right, so that also seems to be an easy one, that if you have movable objects, then you have a coin, so the coin should be the money, and the movable objects should be the commodity. So this is the basic rule, that all movable objects, they create a kinyan on each other. So what does that mean? You see, Rashi says, Vebataras chalipin shechlef elu ba'elu, kevon shemashach echad kane chaveru eshalo. Once you have two metalfin to each other, so if you trade them, so one, once one is taken, so then that creates a purchase on the other, perhaps because of the process of chalipin. It's one type of effective kinyan. Or bein b'toras damin, or whether it is done through payment. B'kam b'titem li'eshalcha b'kach b'kach, v'zeh chozev y'omer lo b'kam b'titem li'eshalcha b'kach b'kach, v'nisratz v'mashlech ha'echa n'skamu ha'dvar. So the high call asir afilu kis malimos bekis malimos gedar shlakish b'gemaros. Even if you want to trade a wallet full of money for a wallet full of money, it would be the same basic story. So Kate said, how does this work? Masha chimono peros. If one person takes a possession of the fruit, lo nosan lo mos, and the other one has not paid the money for it, eino yochel achzerbo. They are no longer able to change. They're no longer able to reverse the deal. Nasan lamos v'lo moshachim manu peros. But if you paid for it, but you have not yet taken the peros, yachol achzibo. So then you still can reverse it. Aval amru mishapara manshei dor hamabul midor haflaga hu asli par mishayna ogme b'diburo. That's a very scary thought. Right, so essentially, this is an important idea to be aware of. Again, it's why I have somewhat mixed feelings of skipping this first half of the parak, because there are important notions, and this one is expanded on a little bit on the Gemara on Memtes. So they almost had a half meaning of saying that we should skip to Memtes and Memches instead of skipping straight to Nun. But the truth is, of what to be said for that, there really is a lot on the Testament days as well. So again, you know, if you have time, certainly would encourage you to fill in these Gemaras also. But on the Testament days, the Gemara picks up on what that means. You know, this idea that there is a klala. So that klala is scary, and it's an interesting question to try to chesed what exactly that means. So on the one hand, you know, this is often the case when it comes to mominus, that, and it, to some extent, draws a little bit of what we talked about on Thursday when we talked about the Nimishor Sidin, that we sometimes have different tiers of behavior. So to here, for example, we find that, yes, theoretically the deal is reversible. You have the right to pull out after or before a certain point. But nonetheless, it's not really proper. It's not really permissible. And we're saying that it's very bad behavior. So in essence, you're in violation of not sticking to your word. So the Gemara on the top of Memchesim Beis picks up on this line, and it says Machlokas Rabbi and Rava Itmar Rabbi Amar Oduye Modinalei Rava Amar Melet Lai Tinalei. So according to Abaye, he basically explained to the person that this is the status, somebody who doesn't live up to his words is not in a good position. And Rava says you curse him, and that's actually how the halacha is brought, that you curse the person with this statement. So Abaye Amar Oduye Modinalei, Abaye says, yeah, you should just tell him. Why? Because there's an iser. You're not allowed to curse someone. So if this is a klala, how could you issue a klala? It's not proper. It's an iser in the Torah. So therefore, it can't be that that's what this means. It must be a simple modah. And Rava Amar, no, I'm not worried about that. Mele leitinelei d'chsev ba'amcha, nasi ba'amcha. What does that mean? Ba'osa ma'isa amcha. That this only applies when you have someone who is acting in accordance with the values of his people. So we know that's a principle that we find often in Ben Adam L'Chaveiro. Have to figure out a little bit how much of an exclusion that is, B'zman Hazeh. It's a fair question to ask, that very often the Sfarim exempt somebody from protection of the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, as we say, for example, say, V'osikov v'ositor espenei amecha, that you shouldn't take revenge against those who are members of your nation. So sometimes a reference to amecha is ba'osa ma'isa amcha. It means specifically those who act as if they are members of your nation. It's interesting, actually, some of the Mufarshim over there, Parshas Kedoshim, in the context of Losika Velositor, they explain that the whole nature of that pasuk is to tell you that Russia doesn't apply in that context. Because that's all about not lending money to someone, or not lending property, let's say, to somebody. That's really the context the Gemara talks about. Somebody refuses to lend you something, so therefore when he needs something from you, you refuse to lend it back to him. So, it's a whole machlokas what the nature of that iser is about. The Sefer Yireim has the idea that the context of the psukim over there is that you should help people out, you should do a mitzvah of chesed. And even if, says Yireim, that's what the lo sikon lo sitor means, that even if he's not helping you. So the hafla writes over there that that means that you don't imply over there, osa ma'isa amcha, that even though it says losikum losito esbnei amacha, that you don't say that only the person who acts to you with chesed, you should act to him with chesed, that even if somebody doesn't act with chesed to you, he's not willing to lend you property, you should still lend to him. So sometimes we apply such an exception, and sometimes we don't, and it's a whole discussion. Nowadays, b'zman hazeh, I think you have to be very, very careful with how we define this exclusion, whether or not this exclusion has really any place, B'zman Hazeh, it's subject to a lot of discussion. But in any event, the Gemara here has it in this specific context, where we're not judging the person in terms of his other activities and saying, okay, he doesn't deserve our protection. We're saying specifically within a certain area, one action triggers another. So that is a much more limited range than you find elsewhere. But it's still very striking that if you think about it, so what did the Mishnah just say? The Mishnah says you're allowed to reverse yourself. But if you reverse yourself, we should give you a mishapar. And this is a whole category, that the person who is not actionable, but he receives a mishapar. So what's a mishapar? So you see it's a machlokas in the Gemara. It's either just, the guy says, I'm not threatening you, I'm just telling you there are consequences. You know, it's a kind of a backhanded way of threatening someone. So here the Gemara has the same possibility. Yeah, you just inform him, listen, I'm not threatening you or cursing you. It just happens to be that people who don't keep their word, God tends to take revenge on. If that doesn't terrify the person, don't know what will. But the opinion that seems to be dominant is that it's a klala. And what's very instructive is to the objection that, you're not supposed to curse people, says, no, but that only applies if they're acting like b'nei amecha. So here we say it's possible to reverse, but only if you want to lose your status as acting like a Jew. That's a pretty heavy statement. So essentially you see the dichotomy here, that on the one hand there is the ability to undo the deal if it's necessary, but at the same time the Mishnah makes it clear that that's not something we really admire too much. And not only is it unadmirable, but apparently it's an aveira. Apparently somebody who would do this would be considered subject to eino osa maisa amcha status. That's a pretty strong statement. And the Gemara in Tesemet Aleph gets into the whole idea that we have that you're supposed to stick by your word, even if it's not absolutely actionable in Bezdin, even if you don't have a situation where it can be enforced. Nonetheless, we have this very strong imperative that a person should stand by his commitments unless he has a legitimate reason to act differently. So that's a very strong statement. And then the Mishnah continues to say something else a little bit different. That Rabbi Shimon Omer kol shekasef biyado yado al yona. But that's a little bit of a different hagdara, that whoever has the money in his hands, he has the advantage. And Rashi explains that that's actually a different opinion. Kol gadar abanan da amri nosim lamos yochel achzebo afilo lokeach. That the first opinion is that either party can reverse the deal even after the money has been given. Biyasa Rabbi Shimon. And here Rav Shimon comes, Lameimar, to say something different. That Mocher Shakol Biyada Hu Biyachal Achzebo, the seller can change his mind. Ava Lokeach Ein Yachal Achzebo, but the Lokeach doesn't have the ability, so that the Gemara is going to discuss why that is. Okay, so then the Gemara has an interesting discussion over here, trying to explain the first part of the Mishnah. It says, Masne lo Rabbi the Rav Shimon Brei, so Rabbi said to his son Rav Shimon, Hazav Kones HaKasef. That's the statement we just read here in the Mishnah. And the Gemara is going to tell us that there was a different way to present it, the opposite way to present it, which I think is the way the Yerushalmi has the Mishnah, if I remember correctly. Hazav Kones HaKasef. Amalei Rabbi Shani Salanu Bialdusach HaKasef Kones Hazav. V'tachze v'tishna l'mano b'ziknusach Hazav Kones HaKasef. Bialdusay Maisavar Ziknusay Maisavar. So Rabbi, when you were young, you told us Hazav Kones, you told us Hakesef Kones Hazav. And now you're an old man, you're telling us the opposite, Hazav Kones Hakesef. Is it permissible to talk to your father like this? It's an interesting question. So there's a tshuva about this in the Minchas Salaz. There's a pretty significant literature, actually, of what exactly is the Hagdara of permissible speech towards the father in terms of arguing with him. So that's another side point that this Gemara is relevant for. So he asks him to tell me, why did you change your mind? Why did you flip-flop? You want to run for office, you have to have consistent positions. Why was it that the earlier tape showed you saying this, and now you flip-flop to a different position? So the response was, Bialduse savar dava l'chashiv hevi tiva. Kaspa d'lo chashiv hevi peirin. So here's one of the indications of what should be considered money. Then initially he thought that if you have gold and silver, so gold, as the wives will tell you, is more valuable than silver, is more honorable than silver. So therefore, that should be money. Money is valuable, right? Kaspa delocha should have a payer. So therefore, kasef, which is less valuable, that should be considered to be commodity. But kanile payer lativa, and like we said, the Peros is what affects the kinyan and creates a debt of the money. So Bezeknuse Savar, when he got older, so why did he say something different? Because he held that Kaspa Decharif Hevi Tiva, Dava Delocharif Hevi Peirah, Bekanile Peirah Tiva. So here he has a tapping and dollar in the base, he has a different standard for what should be considered money. So one thing we look at is what is considered to be a source of value. But we're also interested in charif. What do we mean by charif? We mean that it'll move on the street. You're not going to have a hard time fencing it, so to speak. You're not going to have a hard time making it liquid. So if you have gold, gold may be very valuable if you know how to deal with it, but you're not going to have such an easy time getting a quart of milk with gold. But if you have silver, so silver is what is generally taken as currency, so you'll have an easier time buying milk with silver than you will with gold. Maybe we should pay more attention to that than the fact that the gold is worth more per ounce than the silver is. Hi.
Hi. Is it significant that we're talking about, that in the conversation that we're talking about changing one's mind in a business deal, so even the opinions, the discussed the halakhic opinions are changing their mind without changing.
So that's, you know, it's interesting. It's a very different kind of changing your mind, right? So to change your mind, have a different opinion, again, all flip-flopping jokes aside, you're allowed to have a different opinion. We should perhaps cut our politicians a little more slack in that area, that you can come to a more mature, sophisticated view of things sometimes, but that shouldn't necessarily mean you can back out in agreement with somebody else, that we should take our, I mean, it's worth highlighting the difference. I appreciate the question, that if somebody has a commitment to somebody else, his word should be his bond. It's an important point to emphasize in general, because Chazal have different perspectives on this. We know that the Gemara highlights as a real standard, I have to figure out how much halacha l'maisa this is, the status of Rav Safra. The Gemara says that Rav Safra was a doiver emes b'levavo. So what does that mean? That means that he was somebody who was so honest that if he made a commitment, even if he didn't express it to the other person, he considered that to be binding. So the Gemara has a story that once somebody wanted to buy something from him, and they offered him money, and he was in the middle of Kriya Shema, so he didn't respond to the offer. So this person, I don't know if it was Jewish or not, he didn't know about that he was in the middle of Kriya Shema, so he upped the offer. And again, Rav Safra still didn't respond because he wasn't finished yet. So then he upped the offer again. And he kept raising the price. And then when Rav Safra finally was ready to answer, he finally finished Kriya Shema. So then he insisted on only selling it to him at the original price. Why? Because when that original price was offered, so Rav Safra decided, fine, I'll sell it to you at that price. And then the person didn't realize that the deal was accepted, so he kept pushing for a higher price. And therefore, Rav Safra felt that Doiver Emes Bilvavo, that he's not going to accept the higher price, because in his heart he knew that he was ready to accept the lower price. He felt it was pagam in his honesty to ask for the higher price. It's a good question. So is that the Midas Chasidus, or is that an actual Chiev? Shechter told a story once about somebody, he told a story recently, I mean one of the recent Shurim, about somebody who was looking to sell his, I think he was looking to rent out his apartment, to sell his apartment, and the different buyers came, he was going to sell it to the highest bidder. And he had decided that one of the bids was enough, and then other bids came in, so that were higher. So he was mesupuk if he's allowed to take the higher bids. And he asked many rabbanim, and he got different answers. And he said that most of the responses he got was that he's not allowed to go for the higher bid, because he was already masking to himself to sell to the lower bid. It's an interesting question. I wonder if those who disagreed, so why would they disagree? First of all, I wonder if Rav Safra is a maker adin, or is more of a midas chasidus. Also, you could maybe make a case, probably the person who's looking to sell at a higher price would feel a negia to make this case. So, you know, I don't know if this case is a reasonable case to make or not. Because it's one thing, Rav Safra was dealing with one purchaser. So this purchaser, he says to get more money out of him just because the purchaser didn't know that he could have gotten it for the lower price. So that's perhaps not fair. But when you're dealing with various bidders, so then the person who's willing to pay more, you could argue he should have this list to win out against the guy who was going to pay less. So just because you're willing to accept the lower bid, you can make a case that maybe you have an achrayus to the higher bidder to give him kedimus. That if the rules of the game is the kedimus is going to go to the higher bidder, so maybe you should give that person kedimus. Now, you could also open up a question. So clearly there's a difference here. Somebody hasn't actually told the other person that he agrees, so it doesn't rise to the level of what's in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, Amisha Para, somebody makes a commitment to somebody, somebody is engaged in a transaction with somebody else, and he decides he wants to pull out. So therefore, there's a pagam in his interacting with this other person, but if he hasn't even told the person yet, so it's a fair question to what extent you have a chiyuv there. So you could probably say it a few ways. You could say, in a chanami, there's no real chiyuv klape this other person, that the chiyuv is all for you, that it's a midos issue, that if you were really living on a very exalted, elevated status of emes, so then for your own sake, you're not going to want to take more than what you would have agreed to originally. So it's not about the other person at all. Maybe it's simply about your personal midos. Or maybe you could argue in the topic of this parak that maybe it's a type of onah. That if onah, in general, to have an isur onah, you have to have a market price. You have to have some type of rate for which things should be sold at. If you have something that is a unique commodity, it's not being sold anywhere else, so you're not really going to have a rate. You're probably not going to have a whole concept of, oh no, it's all going to be dependent on what the two parties decide between them, their own independent market will bear. Rabbi Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik LeBracha, has a fascinating article about how to understand the Mechiras HaBachor between Yaakov and Esav in light of that, maybe in the context of our discussions, once we see the Gemara, maybe we'll come back to sharing what he had to say about that topic. But in general, the point would be that if there's no market rate, you and I are just selling something, so then presumably we set the rate, whatever I'm willing to sell it for, and you're willing to pay, that is the rate, and there probably is no room for Ona, as long as there's no deception between the parties in terms of what it is that we're selling. So maybe in the case of Rav Shafra, he's going to say that essentially we were conveying the rate, because once he offered that first number, and he was willing to pay it, so then, and he was willing to accept it, so then that was the rate. So now for him to charge more, when he knows he would have accepted less, it's he felt that that was a type of onah, perhaps. So this draws a little bit... So that's a good question. That is, it plugs in a little bit to what we were talking about on Thursday. You know, the question is, so what's the nature of any... It probably seems like it's a Fdem Shurzi, that's why, again, in the Shiloh I was mentioning from Rav Shechter, it's an interesting question to try to figure out, so what is the Psak that's really Mechuyev to do that, or that's what he's recommended to do. But this, we talked about Thursday, about how even when we talk about something being Lefdem Meshur Sadin, we suggested two categories in which you could see Lefdem Meshur Sadin. You could see that this particular interaction has a justice of its own, looking at this case by itself, that would require you to act in a different way. And you could say that it's not because of this case, it's because of external reasons. That even though the halachas between the two of us in this situation right now are fully self-contained, there are other halachic reasons to act in a different way. So you could probably say the same kind of chakira, maybe two ways to understand the Rav Shafra story. On the one hand, you could say that really he decided it would be onah to charge any more to this guy. Now in the chanami, it's not going to be actionable onah because no one's ever going to know. No one's going to be able to prove that he was able to accept it. So it's lefnim mishur sadin kind of onah because in halacha we would not be able to be koveya that whatever you're thinking should be the right price is going to be the market rate, because no one will ever know. So the halacha, hapsuka, that's written in the Shulchan Aruch, can't draw the line there. But if you know that's really the case, so maybe we could say that lefnim mishur sadin would ask you, would require you to act that way. Or we could say differently, we could say that the whole idea of lefnim mishur sadin also sometimes coming from elsewhere is what's relevant here. That really it's not on that, because you have a deal between the two parties. And if they agree on a price, so then, okay, that becomes the price. That's not going to be actual onah at all. But in terms of his midas ha-emes, that he knows that he was ready to commit at a certain level, and just because he was lucky and the person didn't realize that he wasn't negotiating, and the guy thought he was holding out, so in terms of his midas ha-emes, he felt that that was a pagam. So therefore, off his own midos, he didn't want to act that way. So this is the other kind of lefnim mishur sadin, that it's not internal to the halachic system, it's to that specific halacha. It comes from other places in halacha, and that's why he chose to act that way. Again, also seemingly a lefnim mishur sadin component. sometimes mention in the Sly Sims class that we talk about contracts. So you have a contract. So a contract will generally mean that the agreement is actionable. So you have, if I violate the agreement, then you have proof. You have a document that's signed saying what the original deal was. So you can take that to a judicial body and you can establish that there was a breach here because you can prove that this was the agreement. So let's say you have an agreement between two people. In American law, you can have a contract that's not written also. Right? So it's not going to serve as proof. So let's say you make a deal, but there's no contract that's going to prove it, so the guy's not going to be able to take you to court. So are you allowed morally, even though the person can't necessarily do anything about it, but morally to go back on the contract? So clearly that's wrong, right? If you really have a deal between two people, even if you can't prove it, even if the other guy can't prove it, can't take you to court about it, but if you actually had a agreement, then to reverse the agreement would be wrong. Let's say even more than what the Mishnah is talking about. Let's say you received your part of the payment and you're not going to give your part of the payment. Mishnah says you could reverse, so then you'll reverse both sides. You'll give the guy back his object and you'll keep your money. So even that's wrong because you made an agreement to purchase. But it would certainly be even worse if, let's say, you already got your benefits. Let's say I make a contract with you, oral contract, I say, you paint my house, I'll give you $1,000. And then you paint my house, and I say, oh, well, I'll give you $500. So let's say if there's no written contract, so you can't necessarily prove it, probably, but it's clearly going to be a moral offense anyway. You're clearly going to be deceiving the other guy and taking advantage of him, even though you can't prove it. So that's certainly wrong. But sometimes what the contract represents is it represents the Gemira's Das, that we're going to go back and forth. You'll say, listen, maybe you'll paint my house. And you say back to me, all right, what do you say to $1,000? $1,000, I don't know, that seems a little high. I mean, how long are you going to work for? How much of a job are you going to do? I was thinking more of $500. And you say, well, $500, I don't really know if I could really do that. It's going to take me a long time. And if you don't want me to paint the windows and the door, it's going to take me longer. So I'm taking more, we're going back and forth. So all the words have been spoken, $1,000, $500, and we'll go back and forth many times. Who's going to know exactly what point there really was a meeting of the minds? How are we going to establish that that was what we actually agreed upon? So we need to have some point where we draw the line and we say that was when we both agreed. Otherwise we could have an honest disagreement that we both think we had a different set of terms. So both in terms of the contracts and also in terms of the various kinyanim that we talk about. So sometimes you need a kinyan to formalize a deal, but we know the deal really is there, and sometimes you need proof for visibility of the transaction. And sometimes, and there might be a moral obligation even without that. And sometimes it's not so much that it's just about the proof, but sometimes we don't really know between ourselves when we're actually finished negotiating, when we've actually come to an agreement. And then we need a formalization. And without that, one could argue there wouldn't even be a moral issue unless you could actually be sure between the two that you have decided what it is you want to do. All right, in any event, so that's an important topic to bring up, that whole question of changing minds and changing minds within the context of a deal, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that was why he changed his mind about this, about the role of Kesef and Zav. That maybe Kesef changes because it becomes more, it's more functional as a currency, so therefore we'll call kesef money even if gold is more valuable. So Amar Rav Ashi, Kiel Dusei Mistavri, he thinks it makes more sense what he said as a child, that kesef kones azav, because midiksani hanachoshes kones hakesef, since the Mishnah tells us hanachoshes kones hakesef, which is in where you have the less valuable thing acquiring the more valuable thing. See, Amrish Bishlama Kasper Lagabe Dava Peirahavi, if you're going to tell me that silver vis-a-vis gold is considered to be a commodity, so Hanyu the Chaitani and the Choshes Konas HaKesef. So that makes sense. I have to be taught that nechoshes konas akesef, which is the opposite. So I need to know the opposite. The afalpi lagabe dava peirahave, that even though regarding gold, it's going to be considered to be commodity, lagabe nechoshes tibahave, that related to nechoshes, it's going to be considered a coin. Eliyam is kasper lagabe dava tibahave. If you're going to tell me that silver vis-a-vis gold is considered to be the coin. So here, in relation to gold, and gold is more valuable than it, it's considered to be a coin. In other words, we pay more attention to its functionality than to its value. So l'gapi nechoshes, so compared to nechoshes, the ihu chashiv, ihu charif, mi bai. So why do I need to be told when it comes to nechoshes? Because silver is both more valuable and more functional as a coin. No, I still need it. Safadaita Kamina, Hani Prite, Baashra, the Sagi, Ibn the Sagi, Inu Harifi, Tve, Mikasba. That you might think that these coins, in a place where there's they're more accepted, so then they are going to be more functional than silver. And the Tibahavi will say they're going to be considered to be coins, Kanash Malan. So we see that that's not true. That came into Ikka Duchta, Delosagi Vepera. Delosagi makes me pera happy. That since there are places where they're not as liquid, so then they're considered to be commodity. And Rosh Hashanah has a commentary difference between Asra and Duchta. And Asra is a land, and Duchta is a place. But Asra refers to the general wider populace, and Duchta is a smaller section. So maybe one thing goes on in the populace as a whole, and then there's a smaller pocket where things are different, so maybe you might think that may change the story. So no, it's not going to be, it's still going to be the same thing. So the Rav Ozif Dinare Mibarte de Rav Chia. So Rav borrowed dinarim from the daughter of Rav Chia. Well, the Sof Yarkid Dinari. And afterwards, eventually, the dinari went up in value. So also Lakame de Rav Chia. So he came in front of Rav Chia. He said, what do you want me to do? So Amale Zil Shlimle Tavim Takilin. You have to pay her the full bill. You have to pay her the complete deal. So Iyamr Spishlam Adava Tivahavi Shapir. So if you're going to tell me that gold is considered to be coins, so then fine. So then he borrowed coins, he should pay back coins. Al Iyamr Spayrahavi, but if you're going to tell me that gold is a commodity, so then why is it permissible to do this? I just wanted to get up to this point before we ran out of time, because this is a very practical halacha. That here we have a prohibition. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. There's a prohibition midrabanan called sa b'sa. That in general, you're not allowed to, zanis midrabanan, to lend a commodity for a commodity. When you lend money, it's a mitzvah of the Torah to lend money, so you're supposed to lend currency. If you're going to lend a commodity and say, pay me back the commodity, so then that's an issur d'rabbanan. What's the issur d'rabbanan? That we're afraid that the commodity is going to go up in value. So if I gave you a bag of potatoes and you give me back a bag of potatoes, so maybe when I gave you the bag of potatoes it was worth $5, and you gave me back the bag of potatoes it's worth $6, so essentially I lent you $5, you gave me back $6. So that would be a problem of riba, that would be a problem of interest. So if you're going to tell me that gold here is a commodity and the gold went up and you're asking me to pay back the gold, so it would be saw to saw, the awesome. That would be prohibited.
What about inflation?
So inflation in general, it's a little bit of a complicated question, because in general, even though in the world we talk about inflation, about money changing value, for the most part in halacha, money is going to be defined as that which does not change. That money is the standard by which everything else is measured. So foreign currencies will change value. But let's say for American purposes, in America, the dollar is a constant. And any fluctuation means other things changed vis-a-vis the dollar. But the dollar is an objective dollar. And if a dollar yesterday could buy 5 potatoes, and tomorrow it can buy only 4 potatoes, that means potatoes went up. It doesn't mean the dollar lost value. And if yesterday it was worth 1.5 pounds British money, and now it's worth a pound of British money. So that means the pound fluctuated vis-a-vis the dollar, that even foreign currencies are what fluctuates, the dollar doesn't fluctuate. So therefore, you're not going to have a prohibition of sa'a b'sa'a. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva they printed recently as tshuvas on Chosh Mishpat for many years. We have the tshuvas Har Tzvi on Arachayim and on Yerideya. Recently, he's been very prolific, 40, 50 years after his death. So they came out with a couple of extra volumes in the past few years. So very recently, the volume on Chosh Mishpat came out. So he has a tshuva where he notes that it's not so pashut that money can't go up. That if coins actually do increase in value, then taka, there may be an issue in terms of giving the same amount of coins that were lent. You have to figure out what to do about that. He says what the difference is that there's an issa d'rabbanan of sa b'sa that you're not even allowed to get involved in lending commodities because we're afraid that because they fluctuate all the time, that they will go up and you'll have a problem. And money doesn't have that same type of volatility. But if the coins, even if that which was considered coins, actually did change value, so then you'd have to figure out how exactly to return that without violating the Issa Ribbis. And he notes that others disagree, but he thinks that's the Pashto, so that's a little bit of a complicated...
In those times, the actual coin was what was valued, a certain amount of metal.
Right, so that theoretically could happen. Right, so that was his point, that if the coin actually did change value, so you would have to account for that in terms of how to return it. But the difference between the coins and the commodity is that commodities, before you even get involved, is an Issa d'Rabbanan in terms of Sa'a b'Sa'a, which makes this Gemara a little complicated, because the issue, that's what this Gemara is worried about. This Gemara is worried about Sa'a b'Sa'a. So he said, oh, Taka, I have a problem. The coins went up in value. So he responded, don't worry, it's coins. They're not the commodity. It's the money. It's currency. And therefore, you don't have to worry about sa b'sa. But what Rav Tzvi Pesach is pointing out is that sa b'sa doesn't mean that the money can never change value. It means that we don't prohibit the lend alone in the first place because of the isser of sa b'sa. But if they actually do change value, then that would have to be accounted for. So this Gemara gets harder to read then. It sounds like from the Gemara that because it's considered to be coins that you're not worried about. But the other problem with this Gemara though is that if he was really worried about sa b'sa, so that's the talk of the point, he shouldn't have gotten involved in the first place. So then what was, if he really thought it was a commodity, so then it was also for him to borrow it that way. So either way, you have a little bit of a complexity in terms of how to understand this Gemara. God willing, in about, I guess maybe already next week, we'll have our Ribbis mini section, so we'll talk about this. But what we'll see there, and we'll take a question in a second, is that the Gemara then refers to one of the major heterim I said today and last week, that the Isser Sa'a b'Sa'a is a little bit theoretical, because on the one hand it's an Isser, but it's very easy to deal with. There are a lot of workarounds. Apparently Chazal felt this was something we had to be aware of, but also felt that it's relatively easily accommodated. So it's an Isser which has a lot of loopholes, and one of the loopholes is called Yeshlo, that if the person who Yeshlo, but if the person, we'll talk about this later, God willing, I think it's already next week or the week after that our Ribbis mini course will take place. So, sorry? Yeah, we'll go look at the sources. So, I'll have the packets that we use for the Smicha course. So, one of the exceptions is that if the person who's borrowing the commodity has the commodity, he just can't access it right now. So, that's what the Gemara here says, that Gemara responds, Rav Dinari Havale, the Rav had Dinar in his possession. The cave of the Havale Dinari Naisek Omerlo Hovania Chiavo Bini. So it's as if he's saying that it's locked up in my room and my son has the key, so just give me, you're not really going to be taking more valuable produce from him, you're actually right away being mocking him to pay the produce that you have. So instead of saying that you're going to lend me a bushel of potatoes and I'll pay you back later a bushel of potatoes, I have a bushel of potatoes in my basement, I just can't reach them right now. So that's yours. That'll become yours. I makna that to you right now, and you just give me a bushel of potatoes so I can access it right now, and I'm not going to worry about changing values because it's yours from this moment. If it changes value later. Now,
so
my sister,
you're you're just really trading bushes.
Right. But the mice, as we will discuss.
If you don't have the drugs, it's a problem.
If you don't have anything. Except that...
if you don't have that exact...
No, so the mice, we'll discuss that in practice, we don't require you to have the same amount. If you have some amount of the commodity, that's considered to be Eishlo.
Even less?
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in the Ribbis discussion. So, for example, people who are engaged in currency trading on the foreign exchange market. So one of the ways they deal with it is they have in their possession some amount of all the currencies that they're borrowing and lending, and that's what addresses the Sabasah things. Again, that we can get to when we talk about the Ribbis in more detail. We'll talk about the detail, but just in terms of understanding what this Gemara is talking about, so the Gemara is invoking this Heter, that this Heter of Yeshlo, so he's essentially saying that, yeah, it's as if I have the stuff, I have the coins, I can't access them right now, so Achi Yavu B'niyo, Achi Emsim Atech, until I am able to unlock the door, could you front me some coins? And that's why there is no Isser Sabasah. So again, so why wasn't he worried about this if he thought it was possibly an Isser? So why was he not worried before he borrowed it? So that's apparently the answer. So then it sounds like from the Moskana that that's why he wasn't worried about the Isser, and therefore the question is only after the fact, should he worry about the fact that it changed value? So you see Rashi here explains this Rashi about Dinari Havilei, about the whole idea of Yishlo, how exactly it works. Kishalova Eselu, that when he had them, when he borrowed it, he had the Dinar. The Gabi Sabasar, Tanana, the Omer, the Sunny, Achiava, Bani, Achiava, Smoftah, Shaelu, Shavi, Shaviado, Niknin, Lamalva, Rishusa, Hukro, Riva Sabasar, the Rabbana, the Chiai Gavna, Lugaza. That's how he explained it. That it's as if right away I gave you what I have, I transferred it over to you, what I have that I can't access right now. So when it went up in value, it's not that it later on went up in value when I paid you something higher, but I gave it to you immediately, so it went up in your possession. And then that last line of Rashi is important, that even though if that sounds like a little bit of a workaround, so this whole idea of Sabasah is Drabbanan and Chazal were okay with that. Essentially, you have to try to figure out exactly how that works, that apparently, again, we'll talk about Ribbis in more detail, but apparently when it comes to Ribbis, we find lots of dinim d'rabbanan. It seems that Chazal were very, very concerned that we should have an awareness, a consciousness of the concept of Ribbis, and we shouldn't be allowed to forget about it. But a lot of these situations that they enacted, they also gave us ways to deal with them, that we should be aware of it, but we can also deal with it. So once we're aware and we deal with it, we've accomplished what they want. They apparently wanted us to have Ribbis on our mind, but not necessarily be prohibited from doing all the interactions that would have been stopped. Okay, so we'll stop there. Again, I think, even though it's a little bit of a course correction,